I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. The Porngate scandal involving emails traded among Pennsylvania state officials has resulted in formal misconduct charges against state Supreme Court Justice Michael Akin. Details from WHYY senior reporter Dave Davies.
In a 51-page complaint, the Pennsylvania Judicial Conduct Board lists scores of emails traded by Justice Akin. It mentions jokes entitled Golf Panties and Man Rules. The email traffic was uncovered in an investigation authorized by State Attorney General Kathleen Kane. The Conduct Board says the emails show Akin violated the Code of Judicial Conduct by detracting from the dignity of his office and by failing to act in a manner promoting public confidence in the integrity and impartiality of the judiciary. Next comes a trial in the Court of Judicial Discipline, which could clear Akin or lead to a reprimand, suspension, or his removal from office. Akin released a statement saying he welcomes a review based on actual facts, not speculation and mischaracterization of his actions. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
Some 8% of Chester County residents do not have health insurance, according to U.S. Census numbers. WHYY's Laura Benchoff reports that starting tomorrow, uninsured residents in a more rural part of the county will finally have an option for getting their checkups and screenings.
Oxford in southwest Chester County is about equal parts Black, white, and Hispanic.
Because it's a rural area, there's not the same kind of volume of providers necessarily, and then where they're hard to get to.
That's Kim Bowman, Director of Human Services for the county. Bowman says that's why she's excited to see grassroots healthcare provider La Comunidad Hispana expand to Oxford. Alyssa Jones, director of that organization, says the new federally qualified health center will care for low-income and underserved communities.
So all of our services are available on a sliding fee, and if folks simply don't have any money, then we still provide the service. No one is ever turned away for the inability to pay.
Her group started in the 1970s to help the area's many Hispanic families and farm workers, and it continues to cater to them.
All of our services are provided in English and in Spanish, so folks can communicate in their language of origin.
That's something Bowman from Chester County says is an ongoing challenge for all health and human service providers in the area. While the new location in Oxford will provide both health and mental health care, Jones says getting to a specialist, say a cardiologist or a dentist, will remain a stretch for many clients. I'm Laura Benchoff, WHYY News.
In the 3 years since Superstorm Sandy, the Christie administration has focused on rebuilding beach towns along the Jersey Shore. But there's another part of the waterfront that's been largely forgotten, and as part of our Dirty Little Secrets series launching this evening, looking at New Jersey's toxic legacy, Scott Gurian reports on the vulnerability of the Garden State's industrial coast.
It was October 30th, 2012, after winds from Sandy died down, that the extent of the storm's environmental damage became clear. News helicopter footage showed a major cleanup operation underway in Woodbridge, New Jersey, just across the river from Staten Island.
Over 300,000 gallons of oil have already spilled into the Arthur Kill. Here from the Motiva oil facility. Right now we understand over 200 workers have been working throughout the day and now into this evening.
Unlike New Jersey's iconic shore towns with their beaches and boardwalks, this stretch of coast in the northern part of the state is largely hidden from the average person. There aren't any scenic roads or walkways along the water. In fact, if you want to get a good glimpse of it, you'll need to hop in a boat.
What happened here was that the storm surge came and funneled into these waters. And we saw significant damage all along this coast.
As she travels up the Arthur Kill, New York, New Jersey Baykeeper's Debbie Manns says it was only a matter of time before a major storm spilled oil into the waterway. And there's not just oil and gas terminals like Motiva here. Chemical factories, sewage treatment plants, and even the Port of Newark border the shoreline. Manns worries they could flood again.
They are all vulnerable to sea level rise and future storm events. And what we're not seeing is a comprehensive look at how you make sure that these industries are making themselves flood-proof and that when a storm comes, that the water doesn't run into their facility and then potentially run through into the communities like what happened during Hurricane Sandy.
Ever since Sandy, officials like New Jersey Department of Environmental Protection Commissioner Bob Martin have promised to fortify the state to make it less vulnerable. Here he was speaking in Asbury Park last May.
Wider beaches and protective dunes are part of our effort to protect the coastline from future storms. I want to thank Governor Christie for his vision for a comprehensive coastal protection system. Again, his focus is to protect the coastline for homes, businesses, infrastructure along the entire coast.
But the state's plan doesn't cover the entire coast. Rob Freudenberg at the Regional Plan Association worries that no large-scale efforts have been made to protect the state's industrial shoreline, including facilities that are essential to the region's economy. That's due in part, he says, to the fact that it's a difficult problem to solve.
There's no doubt that these are complicated sites. They're large, with large waterfront-facing areas. And there's a significant amount of hazardous material on them, whether it's their current processes or legacy toxins. And this is not the kind of situation where, you know, a simple solution applies.
The state of New Jersey has so far left the problem up to individual property owners, requiring them to reduce the risk of releasing toxic chemicals. Motiva and several nearby oil and gas facilities that flooded during Sandy say they've taken a variety of preventative measures, like stabilizing their tanks, raising electrical infrastructure, and installing stronger storm doors and waterproof walls. But no new rules have taken effect, and Freudenberg says the state isn't doing enough to ensure that all industrial sites are better prepared for the next storm.
These industries are responsible for chemicals and toxins, oils, raw sewage that could impact the entire region. So I think this argues for a regional approach to ensure that the public health and the natural systems in our region are protected.
What's more, he warns that the problem could get even worse. With rising sea levels, about half of all power plants and sewage treatment plants in the region will be threatened by floodwaters by the middle of the century. Building in resiliency takes time, he says, so we need to start planning now. For WHYY, I'm Scott Gurian.
Gas workers have swarmed the Marcellus Shale region since 2008. The increased demand for housing led to a building boom, but also rising prices and rising rates of homelessness. The state offers funding to help communities cope. The program has been so successful, non-shale counties wanted in, and last month, lawmakers found a way to make that happen. As part of Keystone Crossroads' series on housing, Eleanor Klibanoff reports.
It's first thing in the morning, and Ramona DiMassimo has already claimed her spot at one of the desks in the computer room.
It's habit for me. I don't get anything done. Yeah. I had it in a half hour ago for breakfast. Well, yeah. I haven't made it yet.
DiMassimo and her dog Elvis used to live in a mobile home. She couldn't afford necessary repairs, and sometimes the heating bills. DiMassimo resisted moving into low-income housing, expecting the worst. But Memorial Homes, a new low-income apartment building in Williamsport, surprised her. The apartments are large, clean, and well-maintained. There's a gym, full-time staff, and...
We have a community room. We old hens get in there and cackle.
Getting Memorial Homes built and sprucing up the surrounding neighborhood has been on the county's to-do list for years. Kim Wheeler is the Deputy Director of Planning for Lycoming County.
So we've had great visions, but we don't always have the resources.
The county was able to invest $2.6 million into the project thanks to an unlikely source, fracking. In 2012, the state levied an impact fee on each natural gas well. The proceeds went into the Pennsylvania Housing Affordability and Rehabilitation Enhancement Fund, known as the FAIR Fund. Liz Hirsch of the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania says the money was to help communities deal with the sudden influx of gas workers.
Some of those communities had homelessness for the first time in their history. They saw apartments going from $300 a month to, you know, $3,000 a month.
Over the past 4 years, $35 million of the fund has been distributed to 37 counties. Some of that went to solving the immediate housing crisis by building homeless shelters or providing rental assistance. But many communities use the funding to fix all kinds of housing problems that had been around long before the gas industry. Wheeler of the Lycoming County Planning Office says a lack of affordable, accessible, appealing housing is not limited to Marcellus Shale counties.
You know, whether it's Sunbury or Williamsport or Mount Carmel or, you know, it's a similar picture. And it's really scary to think about what's going to be in 50 years because we just have so much old housing stock.
In October, a bill passed the legislature expanding FAIR funding statewide. The Marcellus Shale counties will still get all the funding from the gas well impact fee. But all 67 counties in the state will be eligible for funding from a new source. Hirsch of the Housing Alliance of Pennsylvania explains.
The revenue source is future growth in the realty transfer tax. What happened is that with the crash, the realty transfer tax proceeds went way down because people weren't buying houses for a few years there. Now it's going back up.
Here's how it works. This year's realty transfer tax income is the base. 40% of any additional income in future years will go into the statewide FAIR fund. The fund will be slow to build, but could distribute up to $25 million a year in time. All that without raising taxes or cutting other programs, which explains how the bill passed the entire legislature with only one no vote. It's not perfect, though. The realty transfer tax relies on a strong housing market. If there was another crash, assistance would dry up right when counties needed it the most. But Hirsch says this is a case of not letting the perfect be the enemy of the good.
If you don't have a place to live, you can't really hold a job, you can't really do your homework. If we don't have that basic human need, really nothing else can fall into place.
She thinks FAIR funding can help counties provide that basic human need. It's already helped the residents of Memorial Homes, like DeMassimo.
I'm so proud of myself because before I moved here, I was on a lot of medications. And I'm not on anything anymore because everything just fell into place.
She is working on quitting smoking. But DeMassimo is not going to let perfect be the enemy of the good either. And for her, things are finally pretty good. Eleanor Klibanoff, Keystone Crossroads.
Keystone Crossroads is a statewide public media collaboration focusing on Pennsylvania cities, their problems, and potential solutions. WHYY leads the four-station partnership. To check out other stories in the housing series, go to keystonecrossroads.org/housing. Turning to this evening's headlines, Philadelphia Mayor Michael Nutter today offered a scathing response to Donald Trump's call to ban Muslims from the United States.
He's taken page the playbook of Hitler. Demonize a group, blame that group for a country's problems, and then seek to ban or eliminate that group as some kind of solution to a problem that does not exist.
Mayor Nutter adds that he'd like to ban Donald Trump from Philadelphia. The Pennsylvania House of Representatives voted today for a spending plan, $500 million smaller than the budget passed yesterday by a bipartisan vote in the Senate. That vote also had the support of Governor Tom Wolf. House Republicans say they'd impose tobacco taxes, tax lottery winnings, and get revenue from internet gambling to make their plan add up. Democratic critics say it's very similar to a budget that passed in June that was vetoed by Governor Wolf. Mostly clear skies, 42 degrees at 6:19. You're listening to Newsworks Tonight on WHYY. The evening forecast, partly cloudy, low 36 degrees. Tomorrow, turning partly sunny. Wednesday's high, 52. Still ahead, picture curtains of LED lights, inflatable Santas, and laser light snowflakes. Okay, now take a break from the glitz of Christmas present and visit the birthplace of the tinsel trade in South Philadelphia.
I think it has tapped into a sense of nostalgia, where people today, with all the bells and the whistles and everything that is so glittery, we're still looking for the traditions.
NewsWorks Tonight continues on WHYY.
Cabrini College is proud to support WHYY, now offering part-time doctoral degrees in organizational development and educational leadership. Cabrini can help you earn a PhD or EdD in 3 years without giving up your life. Their faculty and small classes help to expand your knowledge and professional network while giving you the tools to advance your career. More information on Cabrini's professional doctoral programs is available at cabrini.edu/doc.
Support for WHYY comes from Veritable LP, a provider of comprehensive investment advice to successful U.S. families since 1986. More information at veritablelp.com.
Support the programs you love and depend on this season. Plus, for every donation we receive through Sunday, December 13th, we'll donate a meal to someone in need. Visit WHYY.org to make your gift today.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Dave Heller. This weekend, a Philadelphia theater company will present a 19th century play in one of the 19th century mansions in Society Hill. Hedda Gabler by Henrik Ibsen was groundbreaking in 1890, but little seen today. From WHYY's Arts and Culture Desk, Peter Kermans reports that the Little Theater Company is getting some big-name backing.
Hedda Gabler is a seminal work of theatrical realism. It tells the story of a newly married Norwegian woman who has a lot of ambition, but very little power, and that becomes a recipe for disaster.
I've never had it.
Staged in the historically accurate Physic House on 4th Street, Hedda has just manipulated a recovering alcoholic into drinking again, which causes a rift between Hedda and her friend Tia.
If you could only understand how poor I am. You are permitted to be so rich. You know, I think I will burn your hair off after all. Let me go!
She reacts to things in the only way that she can, which are inexplicable, violent, and catastrophic.
That is producer Kyle Cassidy, who brought actresses Jennifer Summerfield and Jessica Del Canton into Physic House for this two-week production. Immediately after the production, he will film the same cast on site because he says decent film versions of Hedda Gabler are few and far between.
It would be a waste to take all of that work and not let people see it on a larger scale.
To fund both of these productions, Cassidy tapped into online crowdsourcing to raise the $10,000 needed. And he asked Peter Sagal, host of the public radio show Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, to be the bait. Sagal is based in Chicago, but will come to Philadelphia to appear at an after-party for donors.
Great thing about Kyle, who I think is an unsung hero of Philadelphia, is that he's just basically got himself plugged into all these different kinds of worlds, literary worlds and music worlds and film worlds, and I guess public radio worlds, if you count me. And he does this simply by being, A, really talented, and just really, really nice.
Also helping out are Joel Hodgson of Mystery Science Theater 3000 fame and renowned science fiction writer Emma Bull, who wrote an original ghost story loosely based on Hedda Gabler as a DVD extra. I'm Peter Crimmins, WHYY News.
The closer we get to Christmas, the more you'll see things shimmer. And a lot of that sparkle is from the age-old decoration, tinsel. Some find it tacky. Others love the tradition, though that rich tradition is changing, as WHYY's Bobby Allen reports.
The U.S. birthplace of tinsel is in South Philadelphia. The company Bright Star has manufactured the thin, sparkly stuff for three generations now. Judy Kinderman and her son run the company. Her late husband, Sandy, was known as the Tinsel King.
For many, many years, when my husband was very involved in the factory, he would come home and the tinsel icicles would be hanging from his shoes, and he'd bring them into the house all the time, every day.
Those Christmas lights that look like icicles you see hanging from porches everywhere? The family has a patent on that, too. But the original wispy stuff is still their number one seller. Kinderman says Bright Star still controls 80% of the market.
I think it has tapped into a sense of nostalgia where people today, with all the bells and the whistles and everything is so glittery, we're still looking for the traditions.
Tinsel was invented hundreds of years ago in Germany. Back then, it was a luxury good made of real silver. In modern times, the delicate strands were made of lead until the government declared it a potential hazard to children. Now it's made of shiny PVC sheets like this, sourced from China. But some still covet the old school version.
Of course, we still have customers who come in to this day and ask for the lead tinsels because they were beautiful on the trees and they hung very, very delicately. But that has changed.
Les Gould is the guy to talk to about how exactly the tinsel market has evolved. He runs Orman Incorporated that sells holiday decorations to 1,500 independent retailers around the country. And tinsel sales have declined.
I would say at peak and to where we are today, our business in that is probably about 10% of what it used to be.
What's taking tinsel's place? High-tech decorations like LED reindeer and
these laser light things are very popular right now.
He's talking about little devices that shoot an array of green or red laser stars that you can project on your yard. He says they're especially hot in the suburbs. Kathy Decato of New Jersey passed by the tinsel while out holiday shopping recently. She thinks tinsel's kind of cheap looking.
I like ornaments, lots and lots of ornaments. I like bows and ribbon around the tree rather than having tinsel and garland. Yeah, it reminds me of when I was a kid, which is nice, but I don't want to see it now.
Bright Stars Kinderman isn't too worried, though. She says the company makes enough tinsel every year to string it around the entire globe and still have a little left over. They're still shipping thousands of feet of tinsel every year, and increasingly, there's a growing market among web consumers.
It's kind of sparkly and shiny and a little bit different. You know, obviously, draping yourself in tinsel would be a little odd.
Angela Craig of Dallas, Texas, just put the finishing touches on a red tinsel purse she's selling on Etsy, and she's also offering a gold fuzzy tinsel scarf.
When you mix it with other things in the blend, I think that that kind of maybe brings it to a little bit nicer of a level.
Elsewhere on the craft site, you'll find green Christmas tinsel dresses, tinsel top drink stirrers, and of course, knitted hedgehogs made out of tinsel yarn. But to any crafters looking to add to the 166 pages of tinsel oddities found on Etsy, beware. Craig says tinsel has its sharp edges and can nick you as you weave. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
Put some tinsel around your head, it's Christmas. Put some tinsel around your bed, it's Christmas. Put some tinsel on your floor.
And finally this evening, Philadelphia hosts the 116th Army-Navy game on Saturday. And for a while, it looked like the Navy midshipmen would be playing without a key member of their ranks. A couple of weeks back, Bill 36, one of the Navy's GOAT mascots in training, came down with a severe case of azalea poisoning. Thanks to emergency care at the University of Pennsylvania's New Bolton Center in Chester County, we're happy to note that Bill 36 is on the mend and back with his comrades. Bill 33, Bill 34, and, yep, Bill 35. The tradition of GOAT mascots dates back to the 4th Army-Navy game in 1883, and all but three have been named Bill. The GOATs also make appearances at Navy home games and bowl games, accompanied by Team Bill, their entourage of a dozen midshipmen. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. The Langston Hughes play, Black Nativity, imagines the Christmas story with African-American characters. We'll have a review of the local production on tomorrow's show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.
The Philadelphia Foundation supports WHYY. The holiday gift that keeps on giving is a fund at the Philadelphia Foundation. You can support the arts, protect natural areas, promote health, provide scholarships, and help the needy, all while receiving tax benefits. The Foundation makes it easy to make a difference now and forever. The Philadelphia Foundation, 215-563-6417 or philafound.org.
Next time on The World, a 19-year-old refugee remembers reaching safety in the U.S.
I remember eating chicken for the first time. I remember what it smelled like. That was the first food I ate.
Her new home was safe. The war was an ocean away. But then her family hit hard times, and the stress put her into a tailspin. A refugee story you never hear. Next time on The World.
Tonight at 8 on WHYY.
Frederick Living supports WHYY. Frederick Living, a continuing care retirement community nestled in the beautiful countryside of Montgomery County, is proud to announce the expansion of their campus. The meadows at Frederick Living will consist of 55 cottages clustered in an innovative design based on the pocket neighborhood concept. Frederick Living is now taking reservations. Visits can be scheduled by calling 610-754-7878. That's 610-754-7878. Frederick Living. Live well.